Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Keehan. Today we'll discuss the article by Gleeman et al. Titled, Resveratrol Modulates the Angiogenic Response to Exercise Training in Skeletal Muscle of Aged Men. This article published online August 15th, 2014. My guests today are guest editor Nisha Sharkoudian, lead author Lessa Gleeman, and expert Michael Joyner. Let's get started.
Thanks, Kara. We've all heard that red wine can be good for the cardiovascular system, and one of the reasons for this is the polyphenol antioxidant resveratrol. Studies in animals have suggested that one of the ways that resveratrol appears to work is by promoting blood flow via angiogenesis. In the present study, Gleeman and colleagues conducted exercise training in a group of men in their mid-60s, and their goal was to evaluate whether resveratrol supplementation in pill form augmented the angiogenic effect of the exercise training. Lasse, could you summarize your study for us?
Sure, Nisha. Thank you. Well, we investigated the effect of combining exercise training with resveratrol supplementation on the angiogenesis and capillarization in aged inactive men. And as expected, exercise training did really improve angiogenesis and capillarization in these aged men. But surprisingly, when combining exercise training with resveratrol, the effect of exercise training was rather limited on angiogenesis as opposed to improved. This was really surprising to us, and it was evidence that both capillarization and the levels of pro-angiogenic factors were decreased.
So could you tell us about the dose of resveratrol in the context of what a person might normally consume, for example, if they drink a glass or two of red wine with their dinner?
So the dose we gave was 225 milligrams a day, and that corresponds to around 10 bottles or 20 bottles of red wine. So I don't recommend anyone getting that amount of resveratrol from red wine.
Now, the other question I have is, could you discuss the relevance of the balance between angiogenic and angiostatic factors in your study? I know that you looked at factors that turn on blood flow growth and factors that turn off blood flow growth. And could you tell us, were you surprised to see that both categories of those factors were inhibited in the resveratrol group?
This is a really interesting aspect, this balance between pro-angiogenic and anti-angiogenic factors. So we were really surprised to see that the factors both pro and anti-angiogenics were inhibited by resveratrol.
Thanks, Lasse. Mike, could you help us put this research into a bigger picture context in terms of your own experience studying exercise, blood flow, and aging?
Nisha, I think there's a couple of very interesting things about this finding. The first is that a variety of compounds that have antioxidant properties have been shown in some models, including humans, to interfere with exercise-related adaptations. This has certainly been true for vitamin E and vitamin C. And the other really interesting thing about it is that there have been large clinical trials of antioxidant therapy for cardiovascular disease, stroke, and cancer prevention. And the simple thing to say is that in general, these trials have all failed. So the idea that antioxidants are good needs to be challenged. And the idea that oxidative stress is bad under all circumstances probably needs to be revisited as well. And perhaps what our colleagues in Denmark have found is that you actually need a bit of oxidative stress to evoke a normal exercise training response.
Great. Thanks, Mike. And I'd like to ask a question of both Lasse and Mike. Lasse, do you think that your results might have been different if the study had included women?
I'm not too sure that that would affect our results in any way. From animal studies, we know that the effect of resveratrol seems pretty similar in males and females, so I don't expect that.
Mike, in terms of some of the work that you've done, could you comment on potentially the inclusion of women and how these results might relate to that?
I think for something, a basic biological principle like this, it's always tempting to suggest there won't be any large sex differences, but I think on anything related to blood vessels and blood pressure regulation especially, there could be important age by sex interactions, and I think will be really important to address some of these basic biological issues related to muscle capillarization, angiogenesis with exercise, and even the blood pressure lowering effects of exercise in older women as well as older men.
Thanks, Mike. Lasse, based on the results of your study, would you advise men who are in their 60s who are interested in getting in better shape to stop drinking wine?
No, I would not say a glass of wine a day or two is bad for your health or bad for the effect of exercise training. At least this is not what we can conclude from our study. Remember that this is only for people who drinks more than 10 bottles of red wine a day. And I wouldn't advise anyone to do that, no.
I think one of the ideas behind resveratrol is that it might explain the so-called French paradox, which was low cardiovascular disease in the face of a high-fat and high-smoking lifestyle in France. But as people have revisited that issue, it's unclear whether it's red wine per se or just moderate alcohol consumption, period. And if you look at the epidemiologic data, it appears as if two drinks a day for the average-sized person provides a bit of protection, and it doesn't really matter what kind of alcohol, two glasses of wine, two beers, or two mixed drinks, independent of whether it's red wine or not. There could be a bit of an epidemiological false lead in terms of the enthusiasm for red wine and some of its byproducts.
Great. Thanks, Mike. That's very helpful. In the context of exercise in general, Mike, if you could comment on this idea that a pill supplementation in any form could partially or completely replace the effects of exercise.
Well, that's been certainly an area of discussion, a so-called exercise mimetic. I think there's a couple of things people need to recognize before there's too much enthusiasm for that idea. First is exercise has broad-based effects on every system in the body. And while you might be able to do something, for example, to raise mitochondrial efficiency or raise the number of mitochondria in skeletal muscle via a pill, you probably wouldn't do too much to vascular remodeling, increased endothelial function, improved insulin sensitivity, and so forth. So I think the idea of an exercise mimetic is a bit misguided given the broad-based effects of exercise.
Thanks, Mike. I think those are all really important points. So for those of us who would wish to get in shape just by taking a pill, we may have to actually go out and go to the gym. Lasse, could you tell us a little bit more about the exercise training that was conducted in your study and how this relates to the type of exercise that might occur in men of this age group?
Sure, Nisha. So these guys were subject to 8 weeks of exercise training, and they were on spike ergometers 2 times a week for about 1 hour, and they did like a CrossFit session. So that would be like everyday task of rise and stand and walk and just strengthening the entire body. We aimed at doing exercise that would improve their daily activity levels.
Okay, great. And would that be similar to how you would envision, let's say, men in Denmark in that age group? Do you think they would realistically do an exercise session like that?
That's an interesting aspect. We Danes, we use our bikes a lot. And for Danes in Copenhagen, we would probably take our bike if we wanted to improve our daily activity levels. So taking a bike to and from groceries or to and from work is probably the most likely training intervention.
Right. That's an excellent point. Thanks, Lasse. Do you have any additional thoughts about your study in terms of what it means for exercise in general for all age groups?
Well, I think the major point from our study is that there's no such thing as an exercise mimicking pill, at least not at this point. So what people need to do is get out there and do some exercise training if they want the positive effects of exercise training.
Lasse made two very important points there. First, the Danes in Copenhagen ride their bikes. And if we're going to improve the physical activity and exercise capacity of the world, we need to encourage active transportation. People need to build physical activity into their daily life. That's very, very important. And I think the second really important thing is that the training program these individuals were put on, in addition to improving their aerobic fitness, would also be sort of anti-frailty because it had other elements to it.
Absolutely. Mike, do you have any additional thoughts?
I think that if we want to make the world healthier, and especially we want to generate a lot of healthy older people, there's just 5 or 6 things people need to do. Be physically active, don't smoke, don't get fat, stay engaged in life, and if they drink, drink moderately. If you look at the epidemiologic data, people that do those 5 things live long, healthy, and disability-free lives.
I'd like to thank Dr. Lasse Gleeman and Dr. Mike Joyner for joining us for this podcast. Kara, back to you.
You've been listening to an AJP Heart and Circ podcast. For more podcasts, visit us online at ajpheart.physiology.org. Thank you.